White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Oh yes, Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, where the corn grows tall and the wheat grows tall, but they're full of GMO and Roundup insecticide, so I don't know whether you want to eat that or not. It is July the 6th, 2016, and things are moving along pretty good here. I don't know if it was the last time Hillary ran for president or this time. The Saudi Arabians financed 20% of her campaign. So if they financed 20% back in the day, maybe they're financing twice that now. And we know the Chinese financed a whole bunch of her campaign. Why don't we just let the foreigners run the elections? Bring them in here and let them run it. Couldn't be any screwier. I don't know whether you heard any of that yesterday with Obama and Hillary talking, speaking down in North Carolina. You know why they're going there, too. The northern part of North Carolina is full of government employees, military people, and people that work in Washington, D.C., and so forth. So that gives the illusion of a southern so-called conservative state, but in reality it's a Yankee state, or at least almost all Yankee states. So that doesn't mean much, does it? Well, it means quite a bit. I don't think that Obama's going to stick with this crap for the whole campaign, because I think he's going to get very bored and want to get back to his homosexual activities in Chicago. Yeah, he reminds me of a lap car at Indianapolis. You know, they start out ahead of the cars, and they do two or three laps, and then they get out of the race. So I think that's what Obama's going to do, because I know he's hiding his hatred for Hillary. He's going to do a few laps with her and then say, "I'm out of here, sucker." Bill, he's not going to commit to anything, because he's too busy chasing the girls. Nothing's occurred to me so far that has convinced me to change my mind about why Trump is in the race, other than for a shill. I mean, the things he's doing and the things he's not doing, I got to make it pretty plain that he's not really, really sincere about this. However, all the yokel-dokels that are chasing him around and they love him, they take it real serious. They take it real serious. I hear him on the radio. You know, every time it gets around to election time, every jerk, every dork in the country, white ones, they're experts. They're all experts. I hear them calling in by the hundreds on these right-wing shows. And they lead right off like, "I know exactly what's wrong, and I know how we're going to cure it," and all that kind of stuff. But none of them ever say anything about white people. And these are the same people that a week after the election's over and we elect some dipshit to Washington, they'll crawl back into their holes and shut their mouth until next time. But all these experts always come out at general election time and primary time. You don't hear shit from them the rest of the time. They're all experts at the primary and the general election. Believe me, if you happen to get on one of those shows, call in and even try to touch on the race issue, those are the guys these phony conservative that'll ram it down your throat and cuss you all the way to the door. These are the guys that I'm glad to call worse is better. I'm not going to be upset to see a whole large bunch of white people in this country get it. They deserve it. You don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. We'll have to live through it, but they're going to get it. I had a guy send me an email, said, did the Ku Klux Klan believe in slavery? Well, I told him, I said, number one, the plantation system was over before the Klan even got started. So whether they liked slavery or not, it was gone. It was over with. And the big shot ruling class that were running the plantation system, by this time, they were sucking eggs, man. Their day was over. They were scrambling trying to figure out another scam. Oh, I know. White slavery. I know. Wage slavery. Oh, that's even better. We can enslave both the whites and the blacks. Why didn't we think of that before? Well, we did hire him, but we already had the whites in the South as virtual slaves.
Here's one more item for you, the last in our civics book. Rights. Boy, everyone in this country is always running around yammering about their fucking rights. I have a right. You have no right. We have a right. They don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The three little pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, shit like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, fuck. Here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking out for you. You know that? He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights in this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things, like slavery. Just fucking slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a fucking goddamn God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last, after all this time, that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious fucking rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. Yeah. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese-American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. their privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how similar it is? Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a fuck about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a fuck about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Personally, when it comes to rights, I think one of two things is true. I think either we have unlimited rights or we have no rights at all. Personally, I lean toward unlimited rights. I feel, for instance, I have the right to do anything I please. But if I do something you don't like, I think you have the right to kill me. So where are you going to find a fairer fucking deal than that? So the next time some asshole says, gee, I have a right to my opinion, you say, oh, yeah, well, I have a right to my opinion, and my opinion is you have no right to your opinion. Then shoot the fuck and walk away. Thank you.
Well, wait a minute. Hillary and Donald are going to guarantee your rights. Both of them love you, want to take care of you, get you a job. Yeah, they really care for you. You're going to run out there and vote for one of the two of these assholes. What fools. What fools. You only do that because you're afraid and gutless to have an insurrection or a civil war. That's the problem. Especially white people. They've got the brains to figure it all out, but they don't have the balls to carry out what needs to be done. A question. I wonder if Bill Clinton enjoys black women that much that he was having a good time having sex or at least getting fellatio on that plane sitting on the tarmac, because everybody else is coming up with all kinds of weird shit. As far as I'm concerned, that was what it was about. That's all it was about. Since she's not the most beautiful gal in town, most people wouldn't believe that Clinton would have this thing with her in a plane sitting on a tarmac. Well, I guess you just don't know Bill Clinton yet. Why do you think he set up his offices down in Harlem? Why do you think he's the first guy that ever was president or close to president that ever would set up an office in a ghetto? At the time, it was a ghetto. Is getting more gentrified now, but at the time it was a ghetto. He wanted to be close to all those black whores. You know that. I know that. If you don't know that, you better know that. But you see, right-wing shows, conservative shows, they're not going to say that because that's not right. That's just not right. You're not respecting the president. You're goddamn right. I don't respect the president. I don't respect any of the presidents because they all use power illegally, get a lot of people killed, so forth, and then they build monuments and you bow down to them. Reminds me of the two times I experimented around to see how close I could get to a presidential candidate, to where I shook hands with George Bush Sr. I got that close. And then Bill Clinton, I got close enough to shake his hand right here in just the last few years, so. All that stuff about security is total horseshit. The only protection these people have is that people believe they have security. They believe they have security. But really, what good would it do to take out a presidential candidate or a candidate or a sitting president? Nothing would change. The ruling class would just probably be happy because they'd move on up a notch. So... It doesn't make too much sense to go that route. Well, let's go back to the pessimist guide to history, because that always makes me feel better that we're not the only ones getting crapped on. Other people have been crapped on even much worse. And you know me, I'm the pessimist anyhow, pessimist. Yeah, I am. I'm the old Murphy's Law boy. If anything can go wrong, it will. Okay. French opera house fire. Gas lamps accidentally ignited scenery on stage shortly before a performance at Nice's Municipal Opera House on March 23rd, starting a fire that completely destroyed the building. Among the 70 dead were a number of trampled to death by the panic-stricken theatergoers fleeing the fire, a modern innovation, a familiar disaster. Well, at least they got the upper classes that time, and it wasn't poor people. 1881, President James Garfield was assassinated at the Baltimore and Potomac Railway Station in Washington, D.C. It seemed as an ordinary Saturday morning on July 2nd. The few passengers in the waiting room might perhaps have looked up and noticed the President of the United States strolling by with one of his cabinet officers shortly after 9 a.m., but the President's departure for a summer vacation with family and friends was otherwise unheralded. Suddenly, a small, sallow-looking man with thin whiskers and slouch hat rushed up behind Garfield, and from 5 feet away, shot the unsuspecting president twice. Where was the Secret Service? Well, of course, there weren't Secret Service back then. Well, wait a minute. I think there was. If he was after Lincoln, Lincoln had Secret Service. They did their job pretty well, didn't they? So much for the security stuff. That's why ISIS has a lot of power, because they can choose the time, the place, and what to do, and there's nothing you can do about it, unless you're lucky. Garfield fell to the floor, blood spurting from the wounds in his arm and his back, but still very much alive. The assassin, gun in hand, walked out the door and was promptly arrested by police. The newspapers later described the killer, Charles Gatow, as a half-crazed, pettifogging lawyer. They do that all the time, don't they? They always do that. You know, just a deranged individual. They never say, well, he thought it out carefully and he disagreed violently with the president, so he decided to get a new president, so he shot him. They don't ever say anything like that. Crazy-ass guy's a mentally disturbed drug addict son of a bitch. Oh, well, that's okay. That's the way they all should be, right? They're not all that way. Do you think the ones that got Kennedy were deranged mental patients? Bullshit. They're probably Harvard-educated boys. Well, anyhow, the nation still remembering the assassination of Lincoln 16 years before was overtaken by grief. You know, they always said that the nation's taken over by grief. Well, I remember when Kennedy was shot. Half the nation hated Kennedy. I mean, they despised Kennedy. At least half of the country, and a big percentage of the white race. And in many schools around the country, especially south of the Mason-Dixon line, when they told the kids that he'd been assassinated, they stood up and cheered. So they're always putting this bullshit out the nation was overtaken with grief as the mortally wounded president struggled to live. I wasn't overcome with grief. I don't think I felt wonderful that Kennedy was shot, but I didn't cry or sit around and go in my bedroom and think about killing myself. Was overtaken by grief, yeah. Crowds thronged to the White House and gathered in the streets of New York, waiting for bulletins on his condition. Garfield finally succumbed to his wounds late in the evening of September 19th. That night, church bells throughout the nation tolled to mark his passing. Well, most of that stuff's all hypocritical. All this bullshit, how you're praying for their family, and you know just exactly how they feel, and all that kind of stuff. They might as well put a recording chip in the heads of these politicians when there's any killings like that. They always come up with that stuff. Our hearts and prayers go out to you. Yeah, shit. These politicians are so crooked that almost none of them give a shit except how's it affect my career. Let's jump to a Mother Nature giving us hell. South Atlantic Coast Gale. A hurricane lashed coastal areas from Florida to the Carolinas on August 27th. flooding lowlands, knocking down buildings, and killing some 700 people. In Charleston, South Carolina, winds of nearly 50 miles an hour and high seas combined with level-to-level buildings on the mainland and nearby islands. Only the lighthouse remained standing on Sullivan's Island. Meanwhile, many ships still at sea when the gale struck were wrecked along the coast or sank in deep water. 2 days after the storm, the sole survivor of the foundered collier Mary G. Fisher ship was picked up at sea. Rescuers found him naked and delirious, still clinging to a piece of his ship's cabin that had kept him afloat throughout the fierce storm. Wow. Well, I'm going to give you my predictions for this fall, winter, and it could start in August. We're going to see big storms coming in through the Gulf, but we're going to see big storms coming in from the west, too. You know, all you people that think you're safe out there in Texas and Arizona and those are southern states, I think you can see by the weather change by now, it's not going to be business as usual anymore when it comes to the weather. So one reason I do tend to like it here in Indiana, because there's rarely any really bad weather happens here. Once in a while, they get a mini tornado down in the southern part of the state or something like that, or they get a giant snowstorm, but most of the year it's fairly calm around here. Except when I'm giving a speech, I tend to evoke the Mother Nature. She gets all excited when I give a speech. But when's the last time I gave a speech? It's been a long time, man. I'm not in demand anymore. But I'm not being shot at anymore either. Here's another good one. 1881, the Vienna Ring Theater fire. Boy, that fire loves these theaters. Theaters and churches. Flames turned Vienna's ornate opera house, the Ring Theater, into a death trap just before an evening performance of December 8th. Some 850 people died, making this the worst theater fire of all time. Nature hates rich people. Nature hates people who like the opera because they're wealthy people and part of the ruling class. Theatergoers in a festive mood during the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, well, that nature gets all pissed off at that stuff, too, flocked to the Ring Theater in downtown Vienna, Austria, to see a 7 p.m. performance of Offenbach's opera Les Centus de Hoffmann, which had opened to rave reviews the night before. I would have been down at the corner bar myself by 6:50, and my life would have been saved because I would have been hanging out with the unwashed. By 6:50, inexpensive seats in the four upper-level balconies had filled to capacity with between 1,000 and 2,000 people. You know, back then, people didn't take many showers and baths. Can you imagine? Even upper classes, 1,000 to 2,000 people stuffed into a theater, sitting real close. Ugh! God, no air conditioning. About that time, a lamplighter backstage accidentally grazed overhanging canvas scenery with his torch, and the highly flammable painted canvas burst into flames. No, he was a working-class assassin. That's who he was. So I'm going to get these rich bastards. Screams of fire backstage were muffled by the heavy stage curtain, and the audience out front continued milling about the theater, oblivious to the danger. Well, when you got a lot of money and you're in the ruling class, you think your crap don't stink and nothing like that's going to happen to you. Those who noticed an unusual light behind the curtain mistook it for a theatrical light used in the elaborate production. Performers and the stage crew backstage panicked as they ran from the spreading flames. No one thought to lower the iron curtain designed to keep a stage fire from spreading into the auditorium, to pull the fire alarm, or to open the five water spouts above the stage. You see, the best laid security in the world usually is meaningless because it takes people to use it. And they're too stupid to let down the iron curtain and let the water flow out for fire. So you can have the best, what you think is the best security in the world, means nothing. Moments later, a horrified audience watched the stage curtain billow outward and burst into sheer flame. You know, it's a wonder this ISIS and these kind of people don't do that. Just don't go, you know, they don't go in shooting people in the theater. Just go in and light a fire backstage. You know, I mean, you know, how simple is that? Moments later, a horrified audience watched the stage curtain billow outward and burst into a sheet of flame. Up in the crowded balconies, people stampeded towards the narrow, winding staircases leading to the ground level. But just as the mad rush began, someone backstage turned off the gas lights to prevent an explosion, leaving the theater in total darkness. Boy, these people, they're pretty smart, I'll tell you. They shoved desperately to get to the stairs, and smoke filled the hallways and flames spread through the theater. Dozens of people, including many children, were trampled to death in the panic. Many other victims succumbed to the smoke, while some jumped or fell from the upper balconies. One woman who jumped crashed on the top of two other people, and all three died. She must have been one of those big, fat Broomhilda babes. Firefighters knocked down walls to free some of those trapped in the narrow hallways. When the flames became too intense, they held out clothes to catch others who jumped from the upper galleries and windows, thus saving 112 lives. Meanwhile, many of the wealthy theatergoers who were fashionably late arrived to find the flames shooting from the theater's roof. Dressed in evening clothes, they stood helplessly outside with hordes of other spectators, listening to the screams and prayers of hundreds of dying inside. They were praying for the grand God in the sky who never came. After the fire was extinguished, 4 hours later, 850 people were dead and scorched, and hundreds more injured, many disfigured for life. For all of them, the Ring Theater, a showcase for a comic opera, had instead played out the grimmest of tragedies. Someone should have been in charge of the backstage fire drills. There you go. God hates the upper class, at least some of the time. 1882, a storm devastates Bombay, an estimated 100,000 people. Boy, they do it when they do it over there in Asia, they do it big. 100,000 people were killed during a fierce storm on June 5th when a great tidal wave crashed ashore and inundated the coastal area. Mother Nature hates those Asians. Yeah. When she gets excited, she really lets those Asians have it. I mean, they don't mess around with 1,000, 2,000. They have hundreds of thousands of people get killed. Mother Nature's a rough taskmaster. Well, that's enough tragedy for now. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I read you some stuff out of this book, The Race Problem by Dr. John Manus. This came out in the early part of the last century. I'm going to continue today, whether you like it or not. The same law of harmony applies also to the physical inharmonious surroundings in which we live. Slums and dirty places, as well as fat, sick, and flabby-dressed men and women unconsciously reflect upon others. And they influence them accordingly, which results in the end in emotional, mental, and physical ailments. Now, don't you see it when you go down to Walmart or any place like that or any place on the street today? You see big, fat, obese, super obese women and men, and they affect other people. And it's a contagion, a virus. If everybody would start going up to people like that and say, hey, buddy, lose some weight, and then duck, we might get someplace. This is the reason, based upon this psychological law of harmony, for the creation of beautiful temples, statues, and other masterpieces of buildings in all ancient Greek cities and villages of the Greeks. The gymnasium served as the builders of symmetry, symmetrical, beautiful, and strong bodies, whereas the beautiful and harmonious surroundings in the Greek homes and cities served for the physical, emotional, and mental health and spiritual development of the citizens. In ancient Sparta, Nekhes, son of Polyidus, was summoned before the city authority, accused of negligence of himself, gluttony, and lack of exercise, which were responsible for his developing a fat, grotesque, sickly, ailing body. He was threatened with payment of a heavy tax, then to be sent into exile from the city unless he changed his present way of living and by following the disciplines of the rest of the citizens. He reduces himself back to normalcy within a few periods of time. The authorities ruled that such a fat, ugly, sick man served not only as a bad example to others, but that also his inharmonious and repulsive appearance was breaking the aesthetic, mental harmony of the community. Boy, does that fit things now, boy, especially here in Indiana. We firmly believe that we need very badly such a law for the health of our people, physical, emotional, and mental today. At present, a person who commits an act which is considered harmful to the peace and welfare of the community in which he lives is persecuted and punished by law. Why, then, not have a similar law enacted by which all sick, fat, and grotesque persons are summoned before a special court of health? Experts then could pass judgment upon all persons who are violating the laws of health and harmony in their community and sentence them to abide by the laws of healthful and harmonious living. In case of disobedience, to have them confined to a health farm, where in a proper aesthetic and cultural environment and under expert directions, they will work themselves out from under their present sickly conditions and be brought back again to health. Let all of us think seriously about this suggestion. I think about it all the time. Every time I walk down the street, I'm offended. I'm totally offended by what I see the white race becoming. You know, if I see it with blacks, I write it off. I see it with Mexicans, I write it off. But when I see slovenly, super fat, white women and men in tight clothes, maybe t-shirts and shorts, it's enough to gag a maggot. I'm sure that instead of raising millions of dollars and spending them in manufacture of dangerous toxic vaccines and other drug concoctions, as well as building of more hospitals, all of which contribute to increased sickness and degeneration, our people should be taught from the kindergarten up to our colleges how to live properly, how to think constructively, how to exercise and keep themselves in beautiful and harmonious surroundings. Then most of our hospitals and jails will close. This will add to the health, freedom, and dignity of the American nation, which was chosen by divine providence to lead the world on its upward progress. Well, I say it was chosen by nature, maybe. Man, not being content with the politics in his everyday walk of life, he is now bringing politics into the spiritual realms of the universe. This is forbidden by divine law or natural law. And the result is man's present-day confusion, suffering from the lack of spiritual understanding, of peace of mind and happiness. Nature is conquered not by man's arrogance or by force, but only through obedience to her laws in their application in his everyday life. Man, before he will be able to develop mentally and spiritually, must first acquire control of his physical body, eating, resting, exercising, and recreation. Then to control himself emotionally and mentally, the law is, in order to be able to control the higher one, must first learn to control the lower. This is not an easy task for every time to accomplish. It is not being taught in our schools and institutions of learning under our present system of education. This intellectual and spiritual development is a matter founded on heredity. on racial characteristics and on deeply rooted causes nurtured in the subconscious mind of the individual. The book knowledge alone in the schools worsens conditions. This requires a very long time, generations of proper mating, harmonious family conditions, moral surroundings, and the exertion of the trained willpower of the individual in order to be able to accomplish his liberation from the present low plane of existence to a higher step on the path of evolution and truth. Today we're living in a materialistic age, and consequently the consciousness of the majority of humanity is focused on things material, which man can see, touch, examine with his five senses. However, all philosophers and religious leaders of the world know that behind the material forms of things and beings are spiritual entities, souls and spirit of nature, which manifests through all these physical forms that we see in nature. Man, before he is able to do anything, has to think first of what he wants to do. Therefore, the first step of all our rational actions is to conceive or to create in our mind the pattern of what we want to create or to perform on the physical plane of our existence. Spirit comes first, and material manifestation follows as its faithful consequence. There's always close relationship between the thought pattern and the physical form. Our body and parts thereof through which this thought has to be expressed. Thus, the functions and activities of our invisible soul manifest in the physical plane for the soul's communication with our fellow men. Well, so much for that, I don't know. For example, suppose the soul of a great musician conceives a composition. He first creates his composition in his mind. He wants to express it to his fellow men on the physical plane of existence, but he has no musical instrument. He may be dumb, or his vocal cords may be missing, or not developed nor sufficiently trained to enable him to express the musical composition which is in his mind. In this case, the musician, in spite of all his efforts for physical manifestation, can never objectively express his beautiful mental creation. Such a condition will impede both his own mental and spiritual development and that of society in which he lives. Therefore, such an unbalanced condition will be an obstacle to the cosmic law of evolution, which is the plan and purpose of creation. In the same way, each human soul, in entering the physical world, is looking for a suitable physical body to which to incarnate. Well, I don't think there's any proof of that. This is accomplished according to the congeniality of vibrations between the incarnating soul and those of parents to be. When an advanced soul cannot find any suitable physical environment to which it can be attracted, and thus to harmonize itself in the adequate physical form, a double impediment will occur. First, in the advancement of this human soul in a new birth and life on earth, and second, for the betterment and spiritual progress of society and the world in general. This is due to the lack of harmonious environmental conditions and adequate physical bodies, which are indispensable for all advanced souls when incarnated. Well, you have no proof of that. That's the trouble with some of these people who wrote in the past and even the people right now. They can be very good at some things and be very on point, but they tend to get off on their own cockamamie theories about things that they can't prove or see or touch or hold. In the case of integration between the white and the Negro races, such environmental harmony does not exist for the soul because of the inherent differences between soul and physical bodies are too great. By enforcing integration, both races will suffer. Well, that's just a plain physiological fact. You don't have to get into the soul thing. Let us consider the drastic measures that are now being taken by the law of the country for the enforcement of integration. of the races against the wishes and the innermost feelings of our people, as well as the protests of the minority of our scientists, philosophers, and metaphysicians, who know the cosmic laws and what is going to happen with the mixing of the races. We sadly predict that our future enlightened generations will accuse us of practicing modern American racial inquisition, a similar situation exalted in the dark Middle Ages due to the dogmatic interpretation of the Christian teachings by the Roman ecclesiastical hierarchy. Hundreds of thousands of the courageous elites of society of that day who opposed these false doctrines were persecuted, imprisoned, tortured to death in the notorious tribunals of the religious inquisitions in Spain and in Italy by the bishops and other dignitaries of the Roman Catholic Church. Time has proved that the human fallacy then, at a tremendous sacrifice in human life, property, dignity, and prestige of the society and of the Christian religion. Besides this enforced condition on society, kept humanity back many hundreds of years from its natural path of intellectual and spiritual development. We firmly believe that time again in the very near future will prove who is right and who is wrong in the great controversy of our time, that of segregation or integration. Thus, the present victims among our people, our dignity and our prestige as a nation, as well as the suppressed truth, will again be vindicated. Well, we're vindicated right now, but the general population are too stupid to see it. It seems that in spite of all our past lessons of life, we have forgotten that order, system, and strict discipline on all planes is the rule and the pattern of nature and of the universe. Today, cosmic laws are ignored and violated by the people in our materialistic ways of thinking and acting, and they are replaced by man-made edicts in which everyone has to bow through the enforcement of the law of the country, man's law. In case of mixing the races, a mongrelized sub-race is going to appear on Earth. They're called the mulatto. Such an inharmonious condition will impede man's evolution as a whole, which as such is against the cosmic laws of the creator nature. Well, yeah, it does. In fact, they brought racial evolution to a total stop. In fact, they reversed it. Then, gradually, a reaction will be created on the invisible planes of nature. This reaction will gain momentum from the continuation of the inharmonious conditions set up by man on Earth. In due time, this great spiritual force will manifest on the physical plane as a catastrophe in a variety of forms and will destroy the existing unnatural conditions on Earth created by the ignorance of man, including himself. After the storm and destroyed rhythm of the working of the law of evolution, which is the basis of creation, will be reestablished and the balance of cosmic forces of nature will be brought back, after which another new chapter of Earth's evolution will begin. See, we're not, we haven't hit the bottom yet. We got a long way to hit the bottom, and then these things will happen. The submersion of the lost continent of Atlantis in the year 9564 BC was brought about by similar causes, the violation of the cosmic law of balance of the forces working in evolution by the Atlanteans. The solution of the race problem is going to take care of itself, provided man keeps the bloodstream of each race pure and separate from each other. Besides, he must improve the physical bodies of each race by proper feeding, exercise, recreation, and education. By elevating the aesthetic, mental, intellectual, and spiritual states of man in every society and in every race in the world under equal treatment for all. When this is done, the invisible cosmic law of evolution will take care of the rest, according to the law of reincarnation and other immutable spiritual laws upon which creation is founded and is sustained and guided to its ultimate goal by nature. Yeah. It seems that the public opinion has started to be aroused regarding the present misuse of our legislative authorities. In the New York Times of the 27th of July, 1959, a report by the Associated Press from South Bend, Indiana, dated July 26, was published under the above caption. It is stated that Senator James O. Eastland, Democrat of Mississippi, declared tonight that the Supreme Court had transformed itself into a super legislature in an attempt to dictate all activities of federal and state government. Senator Eastland, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, asserted on a radio program that the nation's highest tribunal has literally uprooted the very foundations of the republic, that the Supreme Swine Court has constituted itself as a super legislature. That senator said, annulling, amending, and changing and rewinding at will the statutes and laws enacted by Congress. Senator Eastland spoke on the Mannion Forum, presided over by Clarence Mannion, former dean of the University of Notre Dame Law School. I remember back in the 60s, I used to watch his program on TV, Clarence Mannion, the Mannion Forum. In the New York Times of the 18th of July, 1959, was published a very important report from the Philadelphia, dated July 17th, under the caption, Youth Crime Tied to New Migration. Philadelphia judge ascribes problems to the influx from the South and Puerto Rico. The migration into Philadelphia of about 500,000 persons from the South and from Puerto Rico since 1930 was blamed today for the city's juvenile delinquency problem. Well, at least somebody admitted it back then. Presiding Judge Adrian Bonnelly of the municipal court, which handles all juvenile cases, thus traced the problem in testimony before the Juvenile Delinquency Subcommittee of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. The subcommittee, headed by Senator Thomas Hennings, Jr., Democrat of Missouri, completed 2 days of public hearings in the federal building here. Earlier this year, the group held hearings in New York and Chicago. Judge Monella said the city was in the midst of a crisis he foresaw in 1924 when he told a congressional committee that if the doors of Ellis Island were closed to European immigrants, the doors would be open to immigration from the south of technically bonded slaves into the industrial cities of the north. Since 1930, the judge reported the racial composition of Philadelphia has been changed from integration of new inhabitants from the South and Puerto Rico. Between 1930 and 1953, he testified the number of white children 7 to 15 years resided in Philadelphia increased 2.9%, while the number of non-white children increased 89%. Judge Minelli told the subcommittees, these so-called juvenile delinquents are the offspring of unmarried mothers, putative fathers, unsanitary homes, and the lack of leadership. You see, this was not an accident. And it wasn't just from people that are whacked out and believe in racial equality. This was designed by the power structure for whatever reason they wanted. Cheap labor, usually cheap labor. And to get the white guy out of the way because he's going to want too much money. The result, he said, is debauchery. Philadelphia has a problem of its own, he said. There is no equal to it, and on the basis of migration alone, it is a federal responsibility, he declared. Well, see, now the federal responsibility is to get more and more of these migrants into the country. And they know what they're doing. They're nuts, but they know what they're doing, these people. They want to destroy and change the racial population of the United States. It's very simple. There's no secret to it. Paul D'Artono, city councilman at large, told the committee that too many volunteer groups were making prevention and control of delinquency more difficult. We cannot combat this disease by volunteer committee groups programming their own methods and ideas, he said. Until these volunteers are willing to carry out a uniform program of their efforts will be in vain. Victor H. Blank, District Attorney of Philadelphia, reported an increase in juvenile crime here in the first 4 months of this year. He said the total of 2,303 boys and girls under 18 were arrested in the first 4 months of 1959. Looks like Chicago, doesn't it? Compared with 2,179 in the corresponding period of the last year. These figures, he added, do not include the number of juveniles whose cases were disposed of by some process other than court hearings. Well, I'll tell you what, I think we're going to cut that off there and start up later because, see, this pushing migration by non-whites into the country has been going on for a long time. Pushing migrations into England and all the white countries. It's been a plan of race change. I mean, the people who are behind this are your bitter enemies, and the best thing would have been done is they'd been beheaded with a guillotine because the irreparable harm they're doing to the race and the culture is not repairable. So this stuff didn't just start. It just didn't start. It just started slowly building until it's a wave now of non-whites. They brought a lot of them in. They got them in under the immigration. Ellis Island, people in Europe that shouldn't have been brought here, too. So, but then they jumped from that even to a worse situation of the Negroes and the Asians and so forth. That's it for today. I'm not sure whether I'll have a show tomorrow. There will be a show, but we're changing our website thing and our web email situation here to another company. So we're going to be off the air with one company, and they'll be putting us on with another company tomorrow. So, but you will get a show. So don't worry about it. 14-5.
And they don't want to give black people credit. They don't want to give us any credit. They just want to blame everything on niggas. Did some white man in Boston shoot his pregnant wife and then shot himself to my own niggas did it? Always trying to blame some niggas. And they believed the shit. So the brother couldn't take it or something, and he could jumped off a fucking bridge, right? Then they told. Then a bitch always trying to blame a goddamn nigga. That's why I'm gonna start a new ad. 900, blame a nigga. So when white folks get in trouble, it's in trouble my agency too. Blame a nigga. I just pushed my mother down the stairs. I don't want to go to jail. Blame a nigga over here. All right, I got one on parole. I'll send right over to him. Hello, blame a nigga. I just ran my car to treat my whole family dead. I don't want to be blamed. Get a nigga. Here we got one here with a bad driving record. I'm going to send him right over. Oh, thank you. Thank you. God bless you, blame a nigga. Thank God the Titanic only had white folks. Because you know they let niggas in. Blame the nigga. You know that. All the white survivors. It wasn't that white iceberg. It was niggas. I heard them singing while we were sinking. I heard them. Oh, man, river. That old. You know, they will let white folks make a movie about any goddamn thing. Look at Hollywood. Scissorhands, give me a fucking break. Somebody is on crack. Somebody smoking a pipe at the studio. Somebody at the studio is smoking crack. Scissorhands. Throw mama from the train. Only white folks can throw their mama from a damn train. And it's a hit fucking movie. Ain't that some crazy shit? Throw mama from the goddamn... What's the other thing? White men can't jump. They don't have to. They own the team. Some white man is at bank right now. Ooh, my niggas are jumping. Oh, jump, nigga. White daddy make you jump. Jump. Oh, jump. Single white female. They'll let white folks make a movie about any fucking thing. But I knew they were crazy when they let them make Driving Miss Daisy. In the 90s, Driving Miss Daisy. Fuck Miss Daisy. I will walk before I drive some goddamn Miss Daisy. Some old Jewish woman, I'll take a bagel and beat the shit out of Miss Daisy. This is the 90s. I'll drive that bitch to an alley and rob her. I will do a carjack. Miss Daisy would be on the fucking bus. She'd fuck with me. See, a lot of you are relating, but a lot of white folks are not laughing. They're holding back because they love that Tar Baby, Aunt Jemima, let's go back bullshit. Oh, me dating that, love it. Fuck that. I don't like that cooning, happy slave bullshit. See, you're white. You can go back. Back to the Future. They like all that shit. You can skip on back. Your little ass is white. I go back. I can only go back so far. Then my black ass is in chains. Fuck you. I'm not going back. Trying to trick a nigga back. Trying to trick a nigga back. Come on, nigga. Come on back. Come back to Jamaica. Come on. No, I'm going to stay here in the 90s where I can tell you to kiss my black ass. I didn't like the ending of that movie. In the rest home, he's feeding it. Oh, you're my best friend. I said, look, poison this bitch so I can go home and get some sleep. What they going to do? Let Spike Lee write and direct part 2? Driving Miss Daisy some more?